So that is, let's say, one part, one big part. But the other big part is, what are we really going to do with all the capabilities and capacity that we will have enabled?
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, and my guest today is Boštjan Kožuh. He's from Slovenia and a seasoned AI expert, more than 20 years experience. And we will talk about how AI can be successfully be used and implemented in an organization. And he really highlights the importance of management education. So literacy, especially on a management level, as one of the key success factors. But obviously, we'll talk also about other success factors to really leverage AI in the organization. And we'll also touch a little bit on the state of AI. This interview was big fun to record because we recorded it in a gondola in the Innsbruck area during the Skinnovation Startup Festival. And that's where I met him and where we had this unusual setting. Enjoy this episode. Hey, Boštjan, welcome to the Data Culture Podcast.
Hello, and thank you.
This is quite an unusual setting. We are sitting in a gondola, which is the first for us both. And you're the first guest from Slovenia in my podcast.
Oh, I'm happy to do that. And I'm really happy to be here. Like, the views are amazing. So hopefully we'll be able to focus on.
Yes, we have to focus. And you are 20 years in the AI industry. It's called that way. Or you're focusing on AI for 20 years now. And I would like to pick on your experience. And let's maybe start first as a general question here. AI strategy or AI in companies today, what do you see as the most important aspect that companies should focus on?
Well, I think the first thing that companies need to embrace is that we are not just facing a new technology. It's not about tools that IT should implement. It's actually about cultural shift. It's about change management. And this change needs to start at the management level, which means that, of course, management level needs to be educated. And we're not predominantly now talking about educational technical aspects. It's more education and awareness and literacy about what AI is bringing, what kind of changes are we facing, and what that means for business models, and how the companies will compete in the next 2-3 years. I think that's the most important thing, and it's not easy. And I think very often companies like to have things easy, and that's why we need to focus on this kind of approach and shift. I think that's my most common theme that I see all around.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good starting point. Obviously, it's the Data Culture Podcast, so starting with the culture is a good idea. Let's start with the why, because that's typically, I think, the most important question. If you talk to management, if you try to show the value and ask them to change, how do you explain why AI is important to any type of business?
Yeah, so this why really changed over the past 20 years. When I started doing this, it was extremely difficult to convince anybody because we were talking about very specific use cases where you needed to find good value, and obviously you always need good data, but it was very narrow. I think today the whole conversation shifted, and the reason for that is today we don't have the question of why should we do it. It's like, when are we going to do it and how we are going to do it? Because AI is changing not just us. It's not just about what is our internal opportunity. The landscape is changing. And if we're not looking, you know, forward in the future for 1 or 2 years in the age of agents that will be increasingly capable, and we will not have one agent, we'll have thousands of these agents. What does that actually mean for the whole entrepreneurial landscape if the demand for our services maybe will not be there anymore in the sense that is there today? So it's not about, you know, why should we do it? It's really, this is the imperative now. Mm-hmm. We cannot go back anymore. And everybody is now talking about this general purpose technology approach. And you know, how many we like in the history of humankind, we had like up to 25 of these really changing technologies that change the shape of basically humanity. So to me, it's always, we start with let's first discuss what is really going on and what is AI bringing to the table, and then let's start discussing your strategy. So it's not the other way around. Let's find a use case for AI. Mm-hmm. Let's find a use case for your company. Mm-hmm. So will you be relevant? So I think that's the most important thing, how we should start thinking about these things.
Yeah. That, I think it's a good approach. But what is AI bringing to the table? Is it primarily efficiency gains? I think what we see right now, if we discuss agents, yeah, it's often really about automating specific processes. Is it primarily this efficiency gain, or what do you see what AI is bringing to the table?
Well, the thing is that we have multiple dimensions here, and productivity, like either personal productivity or then organizational productivity, is, I would say, the low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. That is something that we definitely should take on, we should explore, we should, yes, have the tools and have people use it and change the processes. Very often what I hear from managers is, okay, yeah, we can see that there can be some productivity gains, but, if somebody can do some things in 4 hours instead of six, they will just, not do anything more. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling them, yes, but, that is your task. Your task is to find them more work if you have the capacity. So that is, let's say, one part, one big part. But the other big part is, what are we really going to do with all the capabilities and capacity that we will have enabled? So if, for example, if we're saying, look, in the next year or two, we'll have an agent that is on the level of the PhD student, mm-hmm. in a particular domain. So if today you would have 10 or 100 of these kind of experts, what would you do in your company? Mm-hmm. So this is a difficult conversation, and it's not a technological conversation. And this is why very often I see management is not really capable of thinking so strategically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have maybe examples? Did you work with any managers that can foresee this or have good ideas? Or maybe you can give it, maybe make it a little bit more transparent?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I can't give names.
Yes.
I have examples from both poles. Just I think like 2 days ago, I was talking to a CEO in a company dealing with personal transportation. Mm-hmm. And he's now really starting to think and saying like, in the next few years, we will not be offering our services like we are today. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably service will be there, but this is not where they will be generating money. So they're starting thinking about how to integrate autonomous vehicles, agents, computer vision, to simplify travel, to completely reinvent the experience people have traveling with them. And they don't have the answers. Nobody really has the answer. That's one of the things here. Mm-hmm. But he's willing to explore and think about these things. And I think most importantly, he's aware that he will need to do something.
Yeah.
And looking maybe at the World Economic Forum this year, mm-hmm. the Future of Work paper, in that paper, like their research was that almost half of the companies think that in the next 5 years, their business model will have to change. Mm-hmm. How? That's a different topic.
I liked this one catchphrase. I got it on the Data Festival where we are just coming from. And what we were saying is we are moving from an age of software as a service to service as software. And I think that's exactly what you just described, that you have a service company, that software drives it now. And software means basically data at one side and obviously AI or any type of make use of the data.
Yeah, so using your proprietary data, your knowledge, and then servicing it. And we're talking also about now about agents for hire. So if you are able to train your own agents and they are really good at doing things, you are able to, lend them to companies for like a lot of money. Because mm-hmm. recently there was a big debate about Sam Altman basically pushed a tweet out saying like, maybe our agents will cost 20,000 mm-hmm. in the next years. And there was like a bit like, no way, like, is he insane? But I'm saying like, why not? If these agents will bring a lot of value. So it's all about that.
Exactly. Let's go back to the topic of management. Yeah, mm-hmm. And you said, obviously, thinking from the top means thinking about business processes, how business models can change, how my business is influenced by data and AI. What were your most successful maybe ways or approaches to make management more aware, increase the literacy, and especially not only top management, because our experience often is really more the middle management, where you have to work more. So any ingredients here, any recipes?
It's all the levels that you need to engage with, for sure. So my most successful recipe was working with top management as a coach. So basically not having like, we'll have these workshops and with trainings. It's more a coach, it's more conversation that is ongoing. It doesn't need to be long sessions, but it's a sparring partner. Mm-hmm. So giving them somebody to reflect their ideas on. And I think that was very often very successful. In the beginning, the problem that management has, like in the past, technology was not really something they were focusing on. And now they will have to, not from like algorithm perspective, but impact of technology. But as soon as you open their eyes and show them how many things really are going on, that, and I'm always saying ChatGPT is like, this is one tree in the whole forest. Mm-hmm. What is your goal and your task is to understand the forest. Mm-hmm. And very often they do that very quickly. But then, as you said, the middle management, there is where you get the pushback, mm-hmm. because they are threatened. And again, not everybody, but very often this is where all of a sudden there are so many problems and they're saying that, oh, our employees are not able to do it, or our employees don't want it. And I'm always saying, yes, but this is exactly what your job is. You need to explain, you need to give them transparency. And we also then very often talking about the lack of policies in companies. I've been, like 2 years ago, I talked to a very big company and I told them, look, we need to come up with a policy. And the policy on one hand gives constraints for sure, but more importantly, it gives guidance. And they said, the compliance department people, they said, yeah, we have everything sorted. And I said, well, great. I mean, you're one of the first in the world, but great. So, you know, long story short, I think 1 month ago, I finally, you know, persuaded them to give them my template for the policy so that they have it, because they didn't have it. Mm-hmm. So compliance department always thinks about these policies from very different perspective to what actually, you know, is needed and people need. And there's a big, big gap here, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So policy only from compliance, I think that would limit the whole thing quite a lot. Could you give us like an outline what your policy looks like? Obviously not in detail, but just the aspects that you're addressing?
Yeah, so there are a few aspects that you need to address. But so the policy on one hand, if we start, let's say, with the compliance, because it is important, it outlines the data categories, it outlines the tools and the rules of the game. So what kind of data you can enter into certain tools, what are the limitations, and basically education around that. So that's one part. Then on the other hand is I would call them rules of engagement. So how do we actually want to use this? How transparent do we need to be? What use cases are we okay with? What use cases are we not okay with? So that's like second part. And then the third part, and this is not necessarily in this order, mm-hmm. but the third part is also, what is our company strategy mm-hmm. with AI? So is it, obviously nobody will say that in the policy, and it's usually not the case, but it's not to replace people. It's to help them to liberate their minds, to liberate their time so that they're able to spend more time on things that really are valuable. But this is maybe one big part where, I don't know what is your experience, but we are always, this is how I see it. We always are talking about how great it would be if we are free from working on these routine tasks that are boring and repetitive and nobody wants to do it. So we're always saying that. Mm-hmm. But then when you have the opportunity to do it, and then all of a sudden you're faced with a bigger responsibility, because now all of a sudden I need to put my mind into bringing something new. That becomes a challenge. And I think that is where I see the resistance. And that is also where I see a big opportunity for more education and training. How to use our brains from, you know, going from these routine tasks into more creative space.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of thinking about it, or a good approach, obviously. What I'm also seeing in this discussion, what's often forgotten, is yes, we automate. Yes, yes, we want to reduce the amount of labor that's needed for a certain task. Yeah, and that reduces also the, let's say, what people do. But we want to do so much more with data and AI, yeah, that the overall tasks will increase so quickly that we have to be so efficient, yeah, to be able to achieve our goals. So I think there's often only like this one-sided conversation. Oh, now if I only have can need half of the time because the tool is doing the rest, yeah, then I'm half unemployed in a way. But that's wrong. Yeah, I can do at least double the things I should do, or can do.
I very often hear from people who really started experimenting with this is that, like, now finally I can do stuff that I wanted to do because I never had the time. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a big opportunity, but it always comes down to management and how our company operates. Can we really find a new vision or a new task? Do we have the right people? Like in the past, did we hire the right people? So it's all connected. And at the end of the day, like, we have seen a lot of research now that companies who started embracing data culture, AI, analytics many years ago, although many of the things we can say are now discarded and not important, but what is important is they invested in the culture. They invested in the base knowledge that now they can really use and use as a springboard to jump forward. And I think that's a very good lesson for everybody. Because now everybody's saying, okay, yeah, but like AI is changing so much. Every few months we have things completely new. Should we wait? And so, like, if we have that mentality, then we will wait forever. At some point, you need to start. And at some point, you need to embrace that, yes, you will discard things that you will develop. But that's part of the game.
Hey there, I'm thrilled about how our Munich Data Festival went in March, and I can't wait for Data Festival online this fall. We built this event because we saw too many AI conferences with lots of theory but little practical use. On October 21st, we are hosting this free one-day online event showing AI working in the real world. And for this, we've gathered experts from top companies to share their actual implementation stories, what worked, what didn't, and tips you can use now. From agentic AI to the data management behind it, everything focuses on real-world applications. I'm excited to see you at Data Festival Online, October 21st, free, online, and practical. Register now at www.data-festival.com.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, obviously. Companies that invest in culture will be successful. The hype topic of this year, obviously, is agents. So I want to get your view on agents. Our very recent research shows that the adoption in companies is very quick. So, I mean, the topic is maybe half a year old, at the most 1 year. Technology available only for 3 months, maybe. But still, we see that already a third of companies say, yes, we have the first use case in production even, not only evaluating. But we see that happening very fast. First of all, do you see the same? Do you agree that it's happening fast? Secondly, where do you see the most important aspects why this is an important technology for companies?
Mm. So, first of all, I think there's a big discrepancy or like big divide in how we define agents. Mm-hmm. And different companies use different definitions that more often than not fit their definition of products and how it fits their marketing strategies. And that makes sense. But we see definitions of agents ranging from simple prompt automation. So just repeating the same task, valuable, absolutely, but not really agentic. So if we define agent from how it was envisioned, it was all about agency. Mm-hmm. So about being able to be autonomous, to make decisions, to exert control, actually. So in that definition, going from prompt automation and then, let's say, next step, agentic prompting, so more complex prompting, chain of thought prompting, more steps. And where we currently are with most of the agencies, automation of workflows, which is, I just say, like more intelligent RPA. Mm-hmm. And this is where most of the companies currently compete. including Microsoft, these Copilot agents that maybe hijacked the name a little bit. Mm-hmm. But this is where we are. And although valuable, I don't see this as the main point of agents. The main point of agents, where we are not there yet, is really about making smart decisions instead of us. So having additional workforce, essentially. So I'm not saying that the other parts or other definitions of agents are not important, but it's all about the true agents, the ones that bring additional value, not just automate something that we don't want to do. And we have seen first glimpses of these true agents in the form of deep research agents and some others, but the deep research agents are available to everybody. So I think it's a good insight. Also, operators agents like Operator or Manus and others that are showing us that, okay, maybe we can get some information, some insight or some work done that we otherwise could not even do. Mm-hmm. The problem that we have with this agency or autonomy is obviously, if that is the case, who is in control and who is responsible for the actions? And that is, on one hand, a limitation from the regulation perspective or EU AI Act, but also ethical and the reliability of results. And we are not there in the reliability yet. But going in the direction of AGI, so artificial general intelligence, I think it's more about that. It's going from, when we're talking about different levels of AI and also agents, we have different ways of talking about it. But I really like the way how Demis Hassabis from DeepMind, from Google, is defining. He's saying, look, first generation of now generative AI, so first generation of new generation of AI, we are talking about simple extrapolation. So we have a lot of data, and from this data, we extrapolate, we predict, we create something new, but it's basically the same data. In next steps, we're going towards innovation. We're going towards creativity. And they have had a very good success with their AlphaGo in 2016, mm-hmm. Showing some of these things. But it's about that. So we're going towards a direction, or trying to go into the direction, where AI is innovator. So not just repeating what we do, but innovate and teach us, mm-hmm. and bring us to new discoveries, to new business processes, to new businesses.
At the Data Festival, actually, we discussed this topic of reliability, which leads to the topic of trust. Yeah? So can we trust the output? And common sense there was no. Yeah, not today.
Currently.
But then we cannot give these systems agency. Yeah? So the discussion was really, the name is a bit misleading today, because if we can trust the output, we cannot give them agency. Do you see the same?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So it is about agency, but not today.
Yeah.
And that's why I am saying, like, there's such a huge divide in how we define agents. And very, very often, like even yesterday, a lot of people, I think, when they say agents, they mean simply chatbots.
Yeah.
So it's a big thing. But a lot of the challenges with reliability is I think they're going to go away in the future.
Okay.
Also, if we're looking at current state of hallucinations, mm-hmm. Which, you know, some people say that, you know, AI is a dreaming machine, so hallucinations are a part of that. But if we're looking at how many hallucinations we had in the first versions of generative models versus today, when we're combining, okay, more capable models with reasoning approaches, they drastically reduced. Mm-hmm. But they also reduced drastically if we know how to use it. So if we know how to prompt, if we know what kind of constraints to put in, we can already not eliminate them, absolutely, but drastically reduce them. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a very interesting thing that I very often hear and see, and that people with very limited willingness to experiment, they use very simple prompts, so zero-shot prompts, and then get wrong results, and then they're happy. So they're happy that they get bad results, because that is a proof to them that it's not as bad as it actually is. So I think there's a very funny funny divide here in how we approach these things. But nothing will happen also with reliability on its own. We have a big play, big role to play here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the fundamental problem will not go away in LLMs. Yeah? So at some point you have hallucination because it's a stochastic system. Yeah? And how do you see companies tackling that today? Yeah? So obviously, like, you use them, you increasingly use them, you start to use agents. You need to check the results today. Yeah. That's what approaches do you see?
So LLMs also will need to evolve. And on the way to reliable agents, we will probably need to see some sort of new innovations as well. Mm-hmm. But currently, what are the approaches is, firstly, better prompts, more grounding in the data that you have, mm-hmm. and then rechecking that data was actually used. Yeah. And we have different concepts here, like LLM as a judge, or simple orchestration of different agents coming to different results and then checking, are they the same or are they not the same? So it's this kind of approaches. But yeah, fundamentally, if we're treating LLMs as prediction machines, which they are very complex, but the same goes for human brain. Mm-hmm. Human brain is also a prediction machine, and we also have hallucinations. And I think when we are comparing this reliability, we're very often comparing or want AI to be 100%, whereas humans are never 100%. So I'm always saying the right comparison of whether AI is fit for the job is not comparison to the best possible human, but comparison to the person who would actually do that job. And that is a very different comparison.
I completely agree. Yeah. Also bias. Yeah. It's a good example. I mean,
but
humans are
very... bias in AI is originating from bias in humans.
Exactly. Well, that's where it's coming from. By the way, I'm a bit skeptical of this idea of LLMs as a judge of other LLMs, because I think that that doesn't solve the problem, the fundamental problem. But as you said, yeah, we have to fact check. Yeah, we have to find ways to actually check the data that we have. And I think that's the way forward.
Yeah, so it doesn't solve the problem, but statistically, it increases the chances that you're accurate.
Correct. All right. Bastian, I think we have to wrap it up. It was a great conversation. Maybe final words from you. Where are things going? A little bit outlook into the future, but also a summary in a way. Now, what is the most important things companies should really tackle, approach now?
Yeah, so the most important thing every company and every individual should do is invest in literacy. Invest in AI literacy from the perspective of the impact, not from the perspective of algorithms, but from the perspective of the impact on jobs, on dynamics at work, on business processes. That's the only thing actually we can do, because nobody has the answers what will happen. We have some ideas what will happen. We know, like, everything is an assumption, that in the next few years we will reach AGI, so artificial general intelligence, where AI is more capable in, like, intellectually than the most capable humans. And we've also seen in many studies now that when it comes to emotional response or emotional intelligence, that humans are actually preferring the responses and results of AI already to humans.
Interesting.
So the world will shift, but going into this direction, so we'll have intelligence that will basically cost nothing, smarter than us, and then embodied at some point in physical world, like through robotics, humanoid robot. So the challenge that we have, and like this vision that we will need to create together, is what are we going to do with this? How are we going to define our value? And I think that's most important thing. So more important than just saying, okay, yeah, we'll have robots, we'll have great AI. Yes, perfect. But what is my self worth? What is something that will make me distinctive to some others? So, and that's the challenge that we have, and like a good focus to have as well.
Excellent. So, yeah, create a vision. Even if we don't have the all the answers, it's important to start now. To
Absolutely. Start thinking we do not have all the answers. Yeah.
Of course. But yeah, we have to adapt as we go along.
Absolutely.
And also reinvent our companies, our processes, yeah, and think about how to adapt to that.
Yeah, and starting with the reinvention of ourselves.
Excellent. Bastian, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hope to see you soon again. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.